Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. As Len mentioned, I am here to share from the Seven Steps to Awakening. And tonight we are going to begin with quote 706. So let me give a link into the room to 706 in my journal. There you are. So, also, just as a reminder, I will be sharing for about 55 minutes tonight, Len, and then I will turn the mic over to you while I go and get Scott Killaby. And then when I come back, I will, put my hand up. So tonight is the night for our monthly satsang, and Scott Killaby is our guest tonight, so that's exciting. Before I get started, I would like to just play a song, just kind of a opportunity to be centered, kind of like a prayer. And here's a song that just jumped out at me by Natalie Grant. It is called You Move Me.
You know.
so. Sometimes when I start teaching, I have no idea how the words are going to come, but they always seem to. But it's just like, huh, I wonder how this is going to happen tonight. So we are going to be looking at quote 706 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. That is from step 3 in the Seven Steps. And the quotes in this section of step 3 are coming from the Yoga Vasistha. So this is quote 706. The individual is nothing more than the personalized mind. Individuality ceases when that mind ceases. I know that when we talk about eternal life, when we talk about there is no death, death is an illusion, these types of things, I know that some people think that means that I and my loved ones continue forever. And that's not true. That's not true. Just as the body is born, has a beginning, and the body ends, which we call death, the personality mind also has a beginning. And the personality mind also has an end. Now, I'm not sure that that end is always at the point of death of the body. The personality mind, it appears, has the ability to last longer than that. The attachment to the idea that I am this personality appears to be able to go on beyond the body, but it does not go on eternally. Last fall, I had a guest here for satsang. Her name was Miranda McPherson. I think it was Suzanne Marie I was talking to. Suzanne Marie, I believe. I would have to go back now and listen to see which one it was. It was one or the other of those ladies. And this, whichever one it was, talked about her brother and the death of her brother. And she talked about an experience she had where she was somehow able to witness her brother disappearing into, oblivion. But not oblivion, that sounds so bad. Not oblivion, that sounds bad, but disappearing into allness. And she talked about what a great experience that was and how she was able to let her brother go. His name was Daniel. Funny, I don't remember which lady was telling the story, but I remember the brother's name was Daniel. And she was able to let Daniel go because she was able to witness the end of Daniel, but see that the end of Daniel is not the end of life or isness or that which we truly are. This spiritual path is not a path, although I do know people sometimes get confused on this fact, but this spiritual path is not a path of trying to make this body last forever. Although I've certainly met friends who thought that was true. And this spiritual path is not the path of trying to make this personality last forever. Although many more people have that confusion. This spiritual path is a spiritual path of realizing what we really are, which always has been and always will be. It is forever. So it's It's about a shift in identification from identifying with the temporary body or the temporary personality mind to realizing that which is constant. A Course in Miracles in the Manual for Teachers talks about reincarnation, and I've always thought that that's a little bit funny the way the Course talks about it, because the people that I've known who do not want to believe in reincarnation are able to read that section of the Manual for Teachers and say, see, the Course says there is no reincarnation. And the people that I know who do want to believe in reincarnation, I have seen, are able to point at that exact same section and say, see, the Course says there is reincarnation. So I think it's kind of funny how those words in that section of the Course say whatever the reader wants them to say. I will tell you what those words say to me. What those words say to me is that reincarnation is not a truth. It doesn't mean it's not experienced. The idea that I am Regina is not a truth, and it's most definitely experienced, right? So what it says to me is that reincarnation is not a truth. That's not the ultimate truth. However, it can be a helpful idea, because at least it gets people moving in the direction of that sense that there's something beyond this lifetime. For example, if I am Regina now, I've had a couple of experiences that, you know, maybe are reincarnation memories, maybe not, maybe just mental things that happen. I don't know what they are, but we'll use those as examples. So I've had a couple of what appear to be memories from two different lifetimes. One, I would say, was probably from around 1865-ish. That's the way it looked. And the other one was probably from around the late 1930s or early 1940s. That's the way it looked, just from the environment and the clothing and what was happening. In both of these memories, I was a black woman, although I wasn't, no, the first one was actually a black girl. The second one, I was a black woman, but I wasn't the same person. So there would have been, if these were reincarnation memories, there would have been a death and then being reborn as a black female again, so a different person. So let's just pretend for a moment that these were reincarnation memories. I have no way of knowing what they were, but let's just go with that for the sake of this teaching. So if I was this black girl who was born in slavery and was alive during the time that the slaves were, quote, freed, of course, I can tell you that my experience was not one of being free. Yeah, not the way I remember it. But let's just say, you know, that this was the time frame that I lived. And I don't know when I died in that lifetime, because I don't have any memory of that. And I don't remember my name. But let's just call me Letty for a second. L-E-T-T-I, Letty. And let's say that, you know, Letty died. Hopefully an old woman, but I don't know. And then Letty was reborn as another woman. We'll call her Elizabeth. And a lifetime is lived as Elizabeth. And somewhere in the 1950s, Elizabeth dies. And then I am reborn as Regina Dawn Akers. In 1960. Can I actually say that I am Letty, Elizabeth, or Regina? If I experienced myself as these three females, and yet three different females with three different experiences, three different perceptions, three different ways of thinking. Am I really any of them? Or am I that continuation? Just the continuation itself. So you see, I think this is what the Course means when it says that the idea of reincarnation can be helpful. It's not helpful if, you know, you believe, hey, I was Peter the Apostle and therefore I'm very special. You know, then that's not helpful. I don't even think it's helpful if you believe that any fears that you have in this lifetime must come from a previous lifetime. I don't even think that's helpful. It's irrelevant. You know, you look at your mind now to see where the fear is coming from. But I do think it's helpful if you're able to contemplate, if I was this person, and then this person, and then this person. And in my brief series of memories, you know, I don't have any remembrance of being a man, although there was a friend once, Resta Burnham, who said that she saw seven of my previous lives and I was a man in all of them. So if we take Resta's story and add that, then I was a man seven times at least, and then a black female twice at least, and now a white female once at least, right? Am I really any of them? Or am I that continuation that is none of them? You see, and if we contemplate reincarnation in that way, we begin to get a sense of what we really are. It's beyond Letty, beyond Elizabeth, beyond Regina, beyond those seven men, whoever they were, right? It's the continuation itself. And I think that can be helpful if we see that that's what reincarnation points to. And then we start to contemplate the continuation, which is still here, right? The continuation is always here. And we begin to put our attention on that continuation instead of on the body or the personality mind. We start to put our attention on the continuation as what we are. And that way we can wake up to the truth. Then we transcend in our realization both the body and the personality, so that when they end, we are still very clear on what we are. There's no loss to us, just like there's no loss to us when you take off one outfit, you know, pair of clothes, and put on another outfit. There's no loss, right? It's the continuation that's focused on is who I am. So 706 says, the individual is nothing more than the personalized mind. Individuality ceases when that mind ceases. One thing we talked about last week in church when I was the minister for the Awakening Together gathering, we tried some looking exercises. And in those looking exercises, we looked at the body sensations and we looked at thoughts. And what I perceived and what some other people told me they agreed with was that the thoughts seemed closer to the body sensations. And therefore it took, I'm going to call it more discipline in order to observe the thoughts without getting caught up in them as if they were my own skin. It's easier to observe the body than it is to observe the thoughts, because the thoughts are so close to what we are. They feel closer to the isness, to the continuation, to the awareness. But with practice, we're able to see very clearly that I am not the thoughts, that the thoughts come and go, right? And they are not what I am. Well, I know you all have heard the statement said in one way or another that you don't have to wait until you die to inherit the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven, right? You don't have to wait until you die. That means that we obviously don't have to wait until the body dies. It also means we don't have to wait until the personality ends, which might be, who knows how long that ending lasts before another personality is reborn, right? But we don't have to wait until the personality ends in like a death type of experience. What we can do is get good enough now, right here, even while the body and the personality mind are still appearing, is that we can get very good, very practiced is what I mean by good. We can get very good at watching them, observing them, noticing what I am the constant, and what they are the objects, they are the changing, they are that which comes and goes, especially thoughts. Thoughts come and go like crazy. It's very easy to see that they are not constant. And as we get very good or very practiced at noticing this apparent difference between what I am and what I am not, we can awaken to what I am. We can transcend the belief that I am the body or the mind. And that's how we inherit the kingdom of God now. We could say while still living. That's the words people use, while still living, which means while this body and this personality mind are still having their time, right? The individual is nothing more than the personalized mind. Individuality ceases when that mind ceases. So if I come to see that I am not the personality mind, then I also come to see that I am not the person. I come to see myself as that continuation of life, whatever you want to call it, awareness, isness, consciousness. And I also can't come to see that everyone else and everything else is the same as I am, which means the sense of individuality or the sense of separation ends. Barb says, I wonder what it means when read that we do not lose our learning as such. And I would say a perfect example of that, Barb, is like our language. Like we learn language, right? And yet after awakening, that learned skill is still there. We learn how to drive. We learn how to use a computer. We learn how to read. We learn math, how to add, subtract. We learn about money, how to pay for things. And all of that learning is still present. That would be the mind as a tool, rather than the mind as the idea of what I am. So let's look at the journal. This is just my current contemplation out loud of quote 706. But when I originally contemplated this, it was about 3 years ago, about February 3 years ago. So let's see what I wrote then. So 706 in the journal says, "These thoughts are mine" is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. "I see thoughts, but I do not have to believe them" is a helpful interpretation that points toward realization of self. So yeah, that's talking about becoming very practiced, as I was talking about. Although most of us are at least intellectually educated regarding spirituality, and so at least intellectually we know that the thoughts are not mine, right? I'll tell you how to tell when you're falling for the idea that the thoughts are mine. For example, right now, at least in America, we have, it's an election year. When you find yourself feeling attached to opinions about what the candidates are saying or what the candidates are doing or what the personality of one candidate being a better personality than the personality of another candidate or whatever. And you feel something about that. Like you're definitely, maybe you don't know who you're for, but you're definitely against this one. Or maybe you do know who you're for. Or maybe you have strong opinions on things like gun control, vegetarianism, veganism, the environment, et cetera, et cetera. And you can even feel emotional sometimes when you think about your strong opinions on these topics. That basically is you saying, these thoughts are mine. Right? These thoughts are mine. I get all emotional when I see people throwing away things that they could be recycling. These thoughts are mine, is what you're saying. I get all emotional when I hear, a political candidate talking about banning Muslims from entering the country or building a wall, to separate us from Mexico so that people cannot sneak into the country. I get all emotional, then you're saying these thoughts are mine. So we all, I think, do this to some degree. Maybe some of us more and some of us less, but we all at some point feel the emotion of believing a thought, which is our way of saying these thoughts are mine. And so what this is saying, what this journal entry is saying, it would be more helpful to say, I see thoughts, but I do not have to believe them. Igor says, so you're having troubles with only one candidate, Regina, right? I personally do not have troubles with any of the candidates. I feel they are all interesting. I feel none of them can predict what will happen during their presidency and what they will or will not be able to do, even though they have their ideas and dreams. And I feel like whatever is meant to happen will happen. So I am willing for anyone that is running for president to be elected. That's my heart. Yeah, even Donald Trump. If Donald Trump is elected president, then that's because that's what's supposed to happen now. And I'm okay with that. And I get to watch it no matter what happens. Right? I get to watch. I always get to watch. So, but let's say that I didn't like Trump. He's the one that's most popular not to like in our spiritual circles for some reason. So let's say I didn't like Trump. I had strong opinions against Donald Trump. Well, if I believe those opinions and I get all, I get emotional, let's say I don't like Trump and my mom does, and my mom and I get into this conversation, I'm getting all emotional. Mom, how can you like that guy, right? All this is happening, right? That means that's me saying, these thoughts are mine. These thoughts are mine. So instead, what would be helpful would be when thoughts arose about Donald Trump, that I just look at the thoughts and I say to myself, I see these thoughts, but I don't have to believe them. And when my mom, and by the way, I have no idea who my mom supports, so I'm making all of this up. I have no idea what my mom thinks about presidential election. But when my mom, in my imaginary story, when my mom starts talking about Trump and what a great guy he is and how he's better than all of the others, and I see thoughts in my mind that say, how can she think that way, blah, blah, blah. Instead of believing those thoughts and getting emotional, I look at the thoughts and I say, I see that thought, but I don't have to believe it. You see, if we sit around and practice this instead of blindly believing our thoughts, that's helpful. That's learning what Ramana Maharshi called true detachment. True detachment is being detached from the mind, from the thoughts that come into the mind. So if I was to stop right now, which I won't because I'll fill my time, but if I was to stop right now and just, you know, walk away from the computer, that would be enough for tonight. It would be enough if all of us agreed to go into the week really practicing to the best of our ability just this one statement. I see this thought, but I do not have to believe it. And just practice it all week long. That would be enough. That would be very helpful. We would begin to detach from the belief that I am this person in that one action. So again, the quote we've been looking at, the individual is nothing more than the personalized mind. Individuality ceases when that mind ceases. And again, from the journal, these thoughts are mine is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. I see thoughts, but I do not have to believe them is a helpful interpretation that points toward realization of self. And now I'm going to move on to quote 707. Quote 707 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, "This ignorance has become dense by having been expressed and experienced in thousands of incarnations within and outside this body by the senses. But self-knowledge is not within the reach of the senses. It arises when the senses and the mind, which is the sixth sense, cease." Self-knowledge is not within the reach of the senses. It arises when the senses and the mind, which is the sixth sense, cease. And you know, I can't speak from any direct experience of knowing what it is to have the mind or the senses cease. I can't even talk about whether, as long as we have this bodily experience, whether that happens or not. I know that there are all kinds of debates that can occur around that topic in spiritual circles, and the truth is I just don't know, and so there's no reason for me to enter into such a debate. But what I can say from direct experience is that there is something, you know, again, people often call it awareness, isness, life force. There is something that is definitely more intimately what I am than the body or the mind. And that doesn't have senses or mind. It can see what the body experiences or what the senses experience, and it can see what the mind thinks, but it itself does not have senses, or it itself does not have thinking mind. And in fact, again, last Sunday when I was the minister and we practiced the looking exercises, this is what we looked at. What I mentioned I was going to try and do in that brief period of time, that brief 20 minutes, was help people become aware of direct experience. Because again, I'm going to hit myself. You may hear a slap here. If I hit myself, you know, I can feel a little sting right there. Right after I hit myself, and by the way, I hit myself in the hand. I'm not beating myself up in the face or anything. But when I hit myself and I feel that little sting, lots of people interpret that little sting as a direct experience. Right? I feel that directly, people would say. Okay? But what we did during the looking exercises last Sunday morning was, remember, we pinched ourselves. That was one exercise we tried. We pinched ourselves in a place on the finger where it's sensitive to pain. And at first we felt that pain almost as if it was a direct experience. But then I asked you to pause and then look at the pain. And what at least some of you reported is that you could see that you or the body could feel that sensation that we call pain. The body could feel the pinching, but that you were something else and you were looking at it and you did not feel any pain. What you were as the looking, I called it the looking that morning, what you are as the looking did not feel pain. You see, there's nerve endings in the finger, which is why the finger can feel pain, right? But there's no nerve endings in awareness. There's no senses at all in awareness. In fact, how about we just try another little looking exercise that I didn't get to that morning? Right now, with your eyes open, if you look around, you see stuff. Right? You see stuff, whatever stuff you see. So again, just pick one thing to look at. I'm looking at my big blue microphone, my big blue snowball microphone. Pick one thing to look at. And then, with your eyes still on that thing, notice what's looking. You shift your attention and you notice what's looking at it. And this people often call awareness. And then close your eyes. When you close your eyes, you no longer see the thing. The sense of sight is blocked by the closed eyelids. But notice the awareness is unchanged. You could even practice with that by opening the eyes again, noticing what is looking, notice the awareness, and then close the eyes. Notice the awareness is the same. You might even need to try it a few times. Some people are so connected to the senses as direct experience that they say, oh yeah, there is a change, which means they haven't yet focused on the awareness. And so you may need to try it a few times to see, wait a minute, there is no change. The awareness, the isness, the life force, the consciousness, what I am, it's the same whether I'm seeing or not seeing. And that's because it isn't the sense of sight. It's before the sense of sight. It's prior to the sense of sight. It's independent to the sense of sight. If we could close off all of our senses, if we were somehow put in some kind of a tank and they closed the door and locked it and we had no sight, we had no sound, somehow there was absolutely nothing in here to feel, you know, we were in some kind of a non-gravity tank, so now there's nothing to feel, there's nothing to smell, there's nothing to taste. All of our senses are taken away through this tank. The awareness would be the same. And if somehow this tank had some kind of a vibration about it that made the thoughts even stop, the awareness would still be there. The awareness is independent of the senses. Let me go back to the quote, 707. This ignorance has become dense by having been expressed and experienced in thousands of incarnations within and outside this body by the senses. But self-knowledge is not within the reach of the senses. It arises when the senses and the mind, which is the sixth sense, cease. So if we could go into this tank where there was nothing to sense at all and where even some kind of a vibration in the tank interacted with the brain in a way that even thought stopped, right? We become much more aware of ourself as that which is always here, but is not the body and is not the mind. Because the body and the mind would be taken away from us, and yet we would still be present. We'd be present in that non-body, non-mind experience. And the reason we don't usually notice ourselves is because we're bombarded with sensory and mental experiences. We're always seeing something, hearing something, of course also feeling something, tasting something, smelling something, right? But especially hearing and seeing. Hearing and seeing, it seemed like, are the most active. And we're always thinking something. That's the most active of all. And so we aren't aware of that quiet background of isness. We aren't aware of what we really are because we're so focused on the senses and thought. But if you take away the senses and thought, all that's left is what we really are. Let's have a look at the journal. The journal, number 707, says, conditioning is reinforced through the seeing-believing loop. Abstaining from the seeing-believing loop through neutral intuitive presence invites full awareness of self. So the seeing-believing loop is what I call projecting our attention into the movie. If we call this world and this personality, this mind, a movie, remember I talked recently about it being like a four-dimensional movie, and I have a front row seat in the Regina version of the movie. I get to see the movie through the eyes of the Regina person. I get to see what she thinks, what she feels, right? But I'm just the one in the movie suit. I'm not actually Regina. That's a seat in the movie through which I view. But if I forget that I'm the looking that's viewing the movie through this movie seat called Regina, and I project my attention fully into the movie, not only into what is seen and heard on the outside, but also what is thought inside the skin, what is felt inside the body, and I project my attention fully into that, I forget that I'm the watcher, that I'm the looking. And I start thinking I'm actually the character, the seat. I start thinking I'm it. And as I do that, more and more and more project my attention into the movie, then I believe more and more and more that I am the character and that the movie is reality. So the opposite of that would help us to awaken. The opposite of that is returning our attention to myself as the watcher. Noticing over and over again throughout the day that I can see what the senses are experiencing. I can see the thoughts that are running through the mind. Noticing that as experience changes, you know, like as the body goes from hot to cold or cold to hot or from dry to wet or wet to dry or from hungry to full and full to hungry, noticing that I, the watcher, am constant. I, the watcher, am the same regardless of the current changing bodily experience. And doing the same thing with the mind. You know, like we said in the previous journal entry, noticing over and over again that I can see this thought, but I don't need to believe it. And believe it to me is projecting your attention all the way into it. So instead of projecting my attention all the way into it, I want to hold my attention focused on myself as the awareness, myself as the looking, myself as the being. And if I practice this throughout the day, especially if every time I notice I get caught up in thought again, which means, again, that I've projected all of my attention into thought and I'm in believing mode, right? When I notice this, that's an opportunity to return attention to awareness. And again, this is where self-inquiry is a helpful practice. You know, you can ask, what is it that sees this thought, right? And you return your attention to the seer, to the looking. PK Lake Rat is saying, try this for 3 days. It's amazing. So conditioning is reinforced through the seeing, believing loop, through projecting our attention fully into the movie, which includes thoughts, feelings, and what the senses take in. Abstaining from the seeing, believing loop through neutral, intuitive presence. Returning your attention to yourself as the looking invites the full awareness of self. So let me read the quote one more time and the journal entry one more time. The quote was this. This ignorance, and by the way, this ignorance means this idea that I'm this person, right? This ignorance has become dense by having been expressed and experienced in thousands of incarnations within and outside this body by the senses. But self-knowledge is not within the reach of the senses. It arises when the senses and the mind, which is the sixth sense, cease. And then the journal says, conditioning is reinforced through the seeing, believing loop. Abstaining from the seeing, believing loop through neutral, intuitive presence invites full awareness of self. So returning our attention over and over again to the looking rather than the show. And I'm going to go on to 708. In the Seven Steps to Awakening says, give up this subservience to the ghost known as ego sense and rest in the self. Yeah, and I've noticed that myself, that when we are unconscious to who we are, we are like a slave to the thoughts in the mind. You know, the thoughts in the mind come in, I just don't like her, right? And we're a slave to that thought. We feel it, we believe it, we suffer from it, and we're unconscious to who we are. When we become conscious to who we are, and we begin these exercises that we're talking about tonight, either something as simple as, I see this thought, but I don't have to believe it, or something as simple as self-inquiry, what is it that sees this thought? Who am I? Right? When we practice these things, we're actually breaking out of slavery. We're becoming free, becoming liberated. We're no longer a slave to the mind and whatever it says. And we don't have to suffer with the thoughts of the mind. The thoughts can come and go, and we are free. So again, 708 says, give up this subservience to the ghost known as ego sense and rest in the self. Let's have a peek at the journal. The journal says, rest in the awareness of changeless presence, even as experience continues at full throttle. One who engages experience as critical reality remains deluded. One who allows it while resting awakens. Rest in the awareness of changeless presence, even as experience continues at full throttle. One who engages experience as critical, one who engages experience as critical reality, remains deluded. One who allows it while resting awakens. So again, if you're aware that this body is really just a seat in a four-dimensional movie, and that you have a front row seat as Amy or Igor or Jackie or Cindy or Larry or Jay or Lynn or Dove or Laurie or, Jackson, or I'd have to scroll down to see who else we have here, but y'all get the point. If you remember that you're the looking in the fill seat rather than fill itself, you're the looking in the barb seat rather than barb itself. You're just the looking in the Kathy seat, but you're not Kathy. Then you can allow whatever's happening, because you know what? You can watch any movie. You can watch any movie, Sonia. But when you start thinking that you're Cynthia or Nancy or Monica or Jane, right? You start thinking, I am this person, then it no longer is a movie. It's critical reality life. And there are things that maybe you can allow, because you know what? They don't really affect me that much. But there are other things you got to control. You got to manipulate. You got to change. You got to fix. And that's when suffering comes in. Suffering comes from believing we are the character. Suffering comes from getting myself, who I really am, confused with the movie seat that I'm sitting in. Which again, my movie seat is the Regina seat. So again, this journal entry says, rest in the awareness of changeless presence. That means remember you are the looking, even as experience continues at full throttle, even when there's a lot happening in the movie, you stay the looking. One who engages experience as critical reality remains deluded. When we start thinking, I am the character and this is real life, we're deluded. One who allows it, allows the movie to play out, while resting, while remembering that I am the looking, awakens. What's the Course say? I need do nothing. That's the same as I need remain the looking. Rest in the awareness of changeless presence. Rest in the awareness of changeless presence, even as experience continues at full throttle. One who engages experience as critical reality remains deluded. One who allows it while resting awakens. And with that said, it is time for me to release the mic and go get Scott So if y'all could just hang out for a few minutes, I'll be right back with Scott Killeby, and we'll have our third Sunday satsang. See you in a few.